It's the Cooper and Anthony Show.
People didn't get into music back then to be famous. Mm-hmm. They got into music because they wanted to be musicians.
Right.
We're already talking about you, John. Hi. All right, let me...
I heard musicians and I just immediately appeared.
That's right. You know, we were talking about you, of course. Yeah, we were sitting before. I'll do your introduction in a second. But I was saying that when you were making music, it was about people who had something to say and they made music and fame was the byproduct. And now we have people that just want to be famous. So it's like, can you sing? Not really. Here's auto-tune. Awesome.
Mm.
Yes, well, I'm happy to talk about that subject. It's a pet peeve of mine.
All right, good. So let me do the full introduction because you have a couple of really very exciting things going on. All right, we've had some amazing musical guests on our show. This might be the first Rock and Roll Hall of Famer I think we've ever had, Anthony. He is here to tell us all about Oats Songfest 7908. 100% of the proceeds are donated to Feeding America, which is super important. We'll talk about that also. He is the better half, in my opinion, of Hall & Oates. Please welcome John Oates to the show. Hi, John.
Yeah, you know how to flatter a guy, huh? Okay.
All right. So before we get into the things that piss us all off about the music industry, just give us a little background on Oats Fest, how it came about. What's 7908?
All good questions. Well, and I have the answers. In 2013, we had a show in Aspen, Colorado called the Aspen Songwriters Festival 7908. And the reason we called it 7908 is because that's actually the altitude of Aspen, Colorado. And we couldn't come up with a name. And as we drove into town one day, it was on the little sign that as you enter town, it says Aspen, Colorado, elevation 7908. And my wife, Amy, said, what a great name. Let's just call it 7908. And so we used it with the current virtual festival because we just wanted to kind of honor the origins of where this whole thing came from.
I'm glad you said that because my mother was like, maybe he's Jewish and 7908 is the Jewish New Year.
It's not that deep, I don't think.
No, I guess not. Yeah. Yours is a much better explanation. Yeah.
Yeah, me and Methuselah. Yeah, we go way back. but anyway, so that's funny.
it's true.
we had just got our place in Nashville around 2010, and I had been doing a lot of shows at the famous Bluebird Cafe, Songwriters in the Round, and I thought, what a great concept to bring a show like that to Aspen, Colorado, because they had never seen anything like that. Mm-hmm. And we did it for 2 or 3 years, had a really great time. It fell by the wayside, and then this past summer, we were out there again, and we ran into the mayor of Aspen, who happened to be one of my roadies.
Oh, my God.
Hey, it's a small town.
You know,
it's
yeah. Who wasn't your roadie?
Oh, well, you know, okay.
I think everybody has been your roadie at one time.
Really? Hey, you know what? That would make a good T-shirt. Everybody's been my roadie. Well, we're getting off to a good start here, I can tell. But anyway, he said, hey, would you ever consider, you know, reviving it? And this was over the summer, last summer. And we went, wow, what a great idea. We'd love to. But as the year progressed and COVID continued to stay in place, we realized that doing a live show was going to be impossible. So Amy and I said, well, maybe we can do a virtual version. That's when that started. We then thought to ourselves, you know, we need to have a charitable component. We felt like we needed to do something more and we didn't know what to do. And we said, let's combine what we love to do, music, songwriting, with, you know, something good for the world, hopefully. And that's when we partnered with feedingamerica.org. Mm. And that's when we kept 7908. And people always, they ask the same question. I always go, well, what's Bonnaroo and Lollapalooza mean?
That's a good point. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
So, it's just been with us for a while and we thought we'd keep it.
And who was your first phone call? Like without the musicians, who was your first phone call that you were like, you have to do this concert with me?
Well, believe it or not, it was to some of the people who actually did the original Aspen Songwriters Festival back in 2013. Keb Moe, Sean Colvin, Matt Nathanson, called Donovan Frankenreiter, who's a really good buddy of mine, but he wasn't available, unfortunately. And that's really, we got, and then of course I called Daryl. That would be Daryl Hall.
Right. I heard of him.
You know, the guy who wrote Rich Girl.
Yes.
That guy. And like so many of these events, it's always that thing that the managers and or the artists might say, well, who else is doing it? You know, that's always their first question.
Right.
And once you have a
like, you're not enough. Hello, yeah. I'm John Oates.
No, I'm not enough.
I have Sarah Smile money.
Yeah, well. Let's put it this way. Since I'm Ann Oates, I guess I'm almost enough.
You're still 50 million records. It's still a huge number.
Yeah, you know what? This is way funnier than I thought it was going to be.
Thank you.
No, it's excellent. I thought maybe on Friday night, everybody be kind of like, you know, we're chilling. It's Friday night, you know. But anyway.
This is us
so
chill.
Daryl, you know, Daryl signed on. And, you know, Daryl and I had a great, interesting conversation. You know, he said, well, what do you want to do? What's going on? I said, you look, man, this is a chance for us, both of us individually, to do something that's not our big hits. Every time we play together, it's always about the big hits. Mm-hmm. And, you know, thank you, Lord, we've got them and everybody's happy. But I said, you know, do one of your solo songs, man. I said, because I don't know what I'm going to do yet, but I'm going to do something. And so he was all pumped about that. And so he did a really great version of a song that he did a few years back called I'm in a Philly Mood, which is one of my favorite solo songs that he's done. So and so it goes, you know, reached out to Lyle Lovett. You know, he signed on. Bob Weir is a buddy of mine. We played together, did some, you know, shows together. He said he was jumping on board. I called Jim James from My Morning Jacket, who he and I jammed with the band, and we also curated the Bonnaroo Super Jam in 2013.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, there's a lot of synergy here. I think pretty much everyone on the show is someone that I either know really well or have played with, and usually both. So it's really been great. Of course, we have some new artists and some younger artists who I don't know that well, but we really wanted to, you know, have the diversity of genre, musical styles, age, you know, all sorts of things. We wanted to make it a really entertaining show. And to that, we got a guy named Sack Squatch.
Okay.
Have you heard of him?
No. Help us here.
He's Bigfoot.
He's a 7-foot Sack Squatch who plays the saxophone.
For real?
Wow.
For real.
Yes. It was in the Screaming Trees. Those guys were enormous.
No, I don't believe he was. He could have been, but he I don't believe he was.
I've never seen taller people in my entire life. That was bizarre.
Well,
I spoke to like 4 belly buttons. We interviewed them. It was just belly buttons. But that's cool. Wow.
There's another joke there, but I'm not going to go there.
We both thought it, and it's actually true. How do you think she got where she's at?
That's right.
So at any rate, you will look up Sack Squatch when this conversation is finished.
I will.
You will become obsessed and know that he is our co-host. And my wife, Amy, found him on Instagram, and we love him. And he and I actually have done a new single and a video that's going to be debuted on the show. We did an EDM version of Maneater.
No. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to be amazing.
And so we're breaking it out to the world. We're unleashing it on the world during the show. And Sack Squatch is fantastic. We've got all kinds of plans. We're releasing the single on the day before, March 19th. Monster Cat, the EDM label, is releasing it for us.
Wow.
Nice.
So all kinds of cool things have been happening, and there's a lot of energy and a lot of good vibes with this show.
And it's March 20th, which is next Saturday night. It's free. It's a live stream on Nugs TV at 8 p.m.
Yep.
And then I heard you wrote an original song that you're going to be premiering during the show as well.
I got so pumped about all the as various artists started sending in their performances. You know what was really cool about this is that I wasn't sure how it was going to all work out. But as it, you know, began to take shape, no one phoned it in. And, you know, it would have been really easy for a lot of big stars to just go, yeah, I've got this video I did. Yeah, sure.
Right.
But no, a lot of them went out of their way to do an original thing. I mean, some of them, of course, played, you know, some of their big hits, like Michael McDonald did Sweet Freedom. Darius Rucker played Wagon Wheel.
Wow. You know, that's
so
cool.
They're playing like really cool songs. But everyone really went out of their way to do something creative and really awesome. And so when I saw all that, I said, oh, shit, I better step up now.
Sasquatch isn't enough. You better write something new.
The EDM version of Maneater is not enough. Yeah.
Right.
So I did write a song, and since it's my show, I've made it the closing song, I figured. Aww. But it's actually a song called Sonny Terry and Brownie McGee, and it was inspired by the great blues duo Sonny Terry and Brownie McGee, who had a very contentious relationship. They were together for 40 years, and you know, I could see a lot in them. Not that I have any, you know, issues with Daryl, because we're actually really good friends, but just the dynamic of a duo is a very interesting concept. Everyone's always kind of fascinated by it. But at the same time, they needed each other. And I thought that's a great metaphor for the fact that the world needs Feeding America. The world needs some kindness and that's what hopefully this show will bring about.
I like that you chose Feeding America, because who can argue with that? You know what I mean? It's not political. It's not something that's going to tick anyone off. It's something that everybody can get behind, you know? So I think that was a really good choice.
And also we really vetted them because we didn't know, you know, we had contributed to Feeding America personally over the last 2 years, but I didn't realize how bad the food shortage and the actual food insecurity issue, you know, with 1 in 10 families not being able to put food on the table, and you know, millions and millions, and it's actually getting worse. They're such a Feeding America is such a great organization. They over 98% of the money that is generated goes directly to the food banks.
Wow. That's great.
In administrative costs, which for a charitable organization is that's really incredible. So we were very, you know, pleased when they wanted to be partners with us, and it's a match made in heaven, and we're just happy that we can hopefully generate some great awareness and some money for them.
No, and I want to encourage people not just to watch you, because the concert's great, but Feeding America, the thing about food insecurity, it's happening right in your backyard. It's not like over there somewhere else in some state nowhere near you. Yes. I've read the statistics lately just in New York and New Jersey. I live in the tri-state area. I was shocked at how much of that type of food insecurity is literally right out of my window. Yes. And that's what Feeding America is working on doing. And they're totally legit. I wrote a book about some of the places that are not legit. They are 100% legit. So I'm really glad that's who you chose.
Yeah, we're very conscious of that, you know, when we put this together. And the whole team that we put together, the Drive Entertainment Group with Raquel Bruno and Michelle Welch, who are people I know from back in the MTV VH1 days, believe it or not. And then, of course, we've got your buddy, Rebecca Brooks.
Right. She's awesome. I'm really glad that you're working with her. She's really terrific.
She's so good. And her team is just amazing. It's kind of interesting, too, for me, because everyone on our team is female.
Really?
Really? Oh, how woke of you.
Don't get too excited. I haven't gone there yet. But I'm the only guy in this whole thing. Every time we do a Zoom call, it's getting to be kind of comical at this point. But I have to say, I know this might be a weird statement, but I have actually never worked with females in any really, you know, personal in the trenches kind of capacity. You know, over the years. And boy,
Well, you've been in the music business. There are no women that are making decisions.
It's true.
In your industry.
There are a lot more now, of course, but
that's true. Working
with this great female team has really brought a whole different sensibility to a lot of things. So it's been really great for me.
Well, I've been doing it for about 12 years, and it's no walk in the park. It's sometimes it's fun, but 90% of the time it's not.
John, I learned the hard way.
Well, I'm sure glad I didn't say that.
I want to ask you a question about your memoir. I thought you had some very interesting things that were just so unexpected, and you were so honest in it, like the fact that you had this relationship with Hunter S. Thompson. I mean, how random. But that's a guy who would make you snort cocaine out of the barrel of a shotgun. I mean, a person, not you. Mm. How do you survive a friendship like that? He's pretty pushy when it comes to the drug thing.
Well, I wouldn't say we were friends. I would say we were neighbors.
Oh,
we were
okay.
Literally neighbors. If you and you know, we still have our house out in Woody Creek, and his widow has turned his house into a writer's retreat. But literally, if you were to drive out our lane across the road, you would drive right into his driveway.
Hmm.
And I'll tell you a quick funny story. When I first met Amy, my wife, when we were just, you know, actually just getting to know each other. We were looking for some property and she had found this piece of property in Woody Creek and she said she wanted me to come out and see it. So we met the real estate agent out there and it was literally a little ranch with a horse barn and a little tiny cabin. And the cabin had a metal roof and we were standing there just kind of chatting and looking around. We heard as you said, we heard shotgun shots. We heard boom, boom. And then we heard on the metal roof, we heard all these pellets. And literally we were standing next to the building, to the cabin. And we went, I knew it was a gun. And I said, what's going on? And he said, oh, don't worry. That's your neighbor. That's Hunter. Don't worry about it. He's fine. And I think he was trying
fine.
To send, I think he was trying to send a message, you know. But we and then in that cabin, inside the cabin was his red Land Shark, the car that he used in Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It was actually in the cabin, but he didn't own the property. He had just put the car in this cabin and put a padlock on it. So we were going to convert the cabin into an apartment, a guest house, while we built our house. And I kept going up to his house and knocking on the door, and he never answered. And the keys were in it. So I jump started it, started the car, drove it up onto his lawn, parked it directly in front of his door. And I left it there. And I knew him for over 20 years and he never said a word about it.
Wow.
The car just appeared on his property.
Only you can get away with that, Hunter S. Thompson, and not get shot. That's amazing.
You know, and we did attend his funeral that Johnny Depp put together, the one where they shot his ashes out of that giant cannon, mm-hmm. which I have to say was one of the most incredible experiences. I mean, I think it probably ranks up there with the pharaohs and the pyramids. Because it was seriously incredible. So, yeah.
Hey, one of our listeners has a question. Let me just ask you Zach's question. He wants to know, what's the status of the Hall & Oates jukebox musical for Broadway?
Oh, he must be a real insider.
He's a real insider.
Yeah, we've been working on this for a few years. We've had a few different creative groups working on it. And we've had a few books that were written, but we've never 100% been comfortable with the story. We're not worried about the music. We got the music side covered. But we wanted the book to be more interesting, and we didn't want it to be just this kind of shallow flim flam of a storyline that was supported by all these big hits. We really wanted to have some meat on its bones in terms of the book. So that's where it is. And yes, we have a new creative team on it right now. It is moving forward, but as I've learned, Broadway takes a long time. And then throw in a COVID pandemic into the mix, and you can imagine.
Yeah, my mother's a Broadway theater producer, so I see it from her firsthand that she just... She's basically sitting on her couch, chewing her nails. She's got no more nails left.
It's a long process.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, we're really excited. Let me just plug again what you're going to be doing. Oates Songfest 7908, 100% of the proceeds are donated to Feeding America. It will be March 20th. That's next Saturday night. Free live stream, Nugs TV, 8 p.m., John's going to be there. He knows a guy named Daryl Hall who'll be there. David Grohl, Sammy Hagar, Darius Rucker, Gavin DeGraw, an old friend of ours. Thank you so much for doing our show. And we're super excited for Oates Fest.